Washington, this is VOA News. I'm Tommy McNeil reporting for a second day. U.S. President Donald Trump has spoken about mass shootings in schools and what he thinks should be done to help prevent more. He continues to advocate for arming teachers who want to carry guns in schools. While that has been met with criticism, the head of the National Rifle Association, or NRA, has also called for the hardening in schools.
We must immediately harden our schools. Every day. Every day, young children are being dropped off at schools that are virtually wide open, soft targets for anyone bent on mass murder. It should not be easier for a madman to shoot up a school than a bank or a jewelry store or some Hollywood gala.
Some victims and gun rights activists have called for a ban on semi-automatic rifles, such as the AR-15, which was used in the Florida shooting. Special counsel Robert Mueller filed additional criminal charges Thursday against President Donald Trump's former campaign chairman, Paul Manafort, and campaign aide, Richard Gates. The 32-count indictment adds allegations of tax evasion and bank fraud to previous charges of money laundering and failure to register as foreign agents tied to work they did for pro-Russian politicians in Ukraine. Among the new charges are accusations that Manafort, with Gates' help, laundered more than $30 million through hidden offshore accounts and used his hidden overseas wealth to enjoy a lavish lifestyle in the United States without reporting or paying taxes. This is VOA News. UN envoy for Syria, Staffan de Mistura, said Thursday he hopes the UN Security Council will approve a proposed ceasefire, saying there is no alternative to halting the fighting and allowing humanitarian access.
In an increasing incremental militarization of the conflict in Eastern Ghouta, where civilians are suffering.
Russia has objected to a draft UN resolution intended to implement a 30-day pause in fighting across Syria and lift the siege on the town of Eastern Ghouta. At a Security Council meeting that Moscow requested, its ambassador dismissed as not acceptable or not possible the proposed ceasefire and accompanying aid deliveries, along with large-scale medical evacuations. There's more anger and concern among northern Nigerian parents who say as many as 100 of their daughters are still missing after an attack by the Boko Haram militants. Yobe state government officials say about 50 girls remain unaccounted for in that Monday evening attack on Dapchi village. There have been conflicting reports over the number of girls accounted for and how many remain missing. Regional police and the education ministry initially denied that the students were abducted and said they were said to be hiding in the bush after fleeing the attack. The United Nations Atomic Agency says Iran is adhering to key aspects of the deal it struck during the 2015 international accord aimed at curbing Tehran's nuclear weapons development. U.S. President Donald Trump has criticized what he says are disastrous flaws in the agreement. He has pushed the countries that agreed to the Iran pact to overhaul it, but they have rebuffed him and have continued to support the agreement. Mr. Trump has threatened to pull the U.S. out of that agreement. Meanwhile, on the issue of nuclear weapons, U.S. Ambassador to the U.N. Nikki Haley spoke to a group in the U.S. city of Chicago about North Korea and its nuclear program and the needed sanctions against it.
After 25 years of failed bipartisan attempts to bribe the North Koreans into ending their nuclear pursuit, we realized that we have to stop the revenue streams that support it. In the last year, the Security Council has unanimously passed three major, increasingly comprehensive sanctions packages against North Korea. The resolutions ban all North Korean exports, 90% of their trade, 30% of their oil, and we are essentially closing down North Korea's lucrative foreign labor program.
The U.S. Department of Justice is moving toward stripping naturalized citizenships from five men who allegedly lied about sexually abusing children during the interviews and in paperwork. Two of the defendants are from Mexico. The other three are from Colombia, Ghana, and the Philippines. I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America and James Barta in Washington. Today is Friday, February 23rd, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Former Zimbabwe Vice President Joyce Mujuru's party confirms negotiations to join the main opposition MDC alliance.
The information that the people of Zimbabwe should understand is that we have been in negotiation with the late Dr. Richard Morgan Tsvangirai for a long time to form a grand coalition to fight ZANU-PF in the forthcoming election.
Jefferson Chitando is the national spokesman for Joyce Mujuru's National People's Party in Cameroon. Longtime opposition leader Ni John Frundi has announced he will not stand as his party candidate in the 2018 presidential elections. And Pope Francis has declared today, Friday, a day of fasting and prayer for the Democratic Republic of Congo and South Sudan.
The extent of the suffering in these two countries, honestly, it's an embarrassment to Africans in particular and the powers that be in the world in general.
Archbishop Josiah Idawufiaron is the Secretary General of the Anglican Consultative Council. Zambian President Edgar Lungu concludes a two-day official visit to Rwanda. And the United Nations urges European nations to accept more refugees amid rising anti-migrant sentiments. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley Sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Former Zimbabwe Vice President Joyce Mujuru's National People's Party has confirmed it has been in negotiations to join main opposition Movement for Democratic Change, MDC, led by the late Morgan Tsvangirai ahead of this year's presidential election. Mujuru reportedly said she will join the MDC to honor the late Tsvangirai's commitment to the struggle for democracy. Tsvangirai, who led the democratic struggle for many years during the presidency of Robert Mugabe, died earlier this month in South Africa from colon cancer. Jefferson Chitando, the national spokesman for Mujuru's National People's Party, says negotiations with the MDC for a grand coalition began long before, but were stalled after Mr. Tsvangirai's health deteriorated.
All information and the information that the people of Zimbabwe should understand is that we have been in negotiation with the late Dr. Richard Morgan Tsvangirai for a long time to form a grand coalition to fight ZANU-PF in the forthcoming election. However, when given the president of the MDC, the late Dr. Morgan Tsvangirai, the document which they should have answered. That's when Morgan Tsvangirai's health deteriorated. So we're not able to get a reply from the MDC. So we are still saying our party is still open to discuss and to negotiate for a coalition with them.
What do you make of the announcement that allegedly was made by Ms. Mujuru on the social network that your party is joining and that people should be excited about that?
That is social media, which is being circulated by somebody who is called the pseudonym Joyce Mujuru. It's not the real Joyce Mujuru, the president of the NPP. The president of the NPP does not negotiate through social media. He makes announcements after the organs of the party have sat down and made a resolution. We will make a correct announcement when the time comes, when we have finished the negotiation. However, the negotiation is not on the part of the NPP. The ball is in the court of the MDCT because the MDCT is still holding the document which should answer to two basically things. One, the identity of the coalition. That is A, the name of the coalition. B, the logo of the coalition. C, the colors which are going to use. The question of constituent allocation. That is the two fundamental issues which we gave to the late Dr. Richard Morgan Tsvangirai.
Mr. Chitando, what does your party and Madam Mujuru herself, what do you think about the upcoming elections? Do you think the time is enough for preparation for the election?
The time to prepare for the election is still enough. If we put our heads together with the MDC and try to rush up with the negotiation and form the Grand Coalition, if the Grand Coalition doesn't work, we are prepared to go into the election with the People's Rainbow Coalition, because President Mujuru is already a presidential candidate of the People's Rainbow Coalition.
One thing that has plagued African opposition parties is always everyone in the opposition wants to be the president. Let's say she joins the MDC. Is Madame Mujuru willing to play a lesser role instead of being the leader of the party?
Dr. Mujuru has ever said that she wants to be the leader of the coalition. She wants to liberate the people of Zimbabwe. You should understand that Dr. Mujuru went to Mozambique to liberate the people of Zimbabwe at the age of 18. She never dreamt of being the vice president of Zimbabwe, but she had the heart and the spirit to go and liberate the people of Zimbabwe.
Jefferson Chitando is the national spokesman for Joyce Mujuru's National People's Party of Zimbabwe. He was speaking with me from the capital, Harare. In Cameroon, longtime opposition leader Ni John Frundi of the Social Democratic Front Party has announced he will not stand as his party's candidate in the 2018 presidential election. Mr. Frundi has led the SDF since he founded it in 1990. At a three-day party convention being held in Bamenda, Frundi said he was stepping down to make way for a younger generation of leaders. The convention is being held amid threats from the Amazonian separatist movement, the group seeking independence for the country's English-speaking regions. The group has banned all political activities in southern Cameroon. The group has also declared a three-day ghost town in Bamenda beginning yesterday, Thursday. Frundi says the purpose of the convention is to choose the party's candidates for this year's election.
No, the leader can as a presidential candidate, but I'm still the leader of the party.
Now, do you hope that your party will choose a candidate, a new leader, before the end of your convention?
Yeah, we still have to choose the presidential candidate, the flag bearer, to represent the party, the presidential race.
Mr. Frundi, do you think you have put in place the structures for a smooth transition?
Yeah, the candidates who are applying are people who worked with me for about 28, 27 years. And I think they understand the basic tenets of the party, and they should be able to effectively and faithfully represent the party in the race.
I know that Mr. Joshua Osei has been your deputy. Are you going to endorse him as your successor?
No, it's the people to choose. People should not suspect, because they see me. Anybody you spy with, they tell you that, that is the person who is supporting. As a leader, I'm neutral, and it's the convention that will choose a person. And they're choosing this person on their own knowledge. They're not just picking anybody because you're fair or because you're tall or short or fat. They are choosing a person that they know can deliver. So they should not try to blackmail OC to say, that's from this candidate. I think I've worked closer with Banda than OC. So why don't they say that?
Mr. Frundi, as you know, the so-called Amazonia people, or the people who want independence for Anglophone Cameroon, are saying that they wanted you to postpone this convention that you are having, but you still went ahead to have it.
I postponed the convention about five times, and quite a number of people had gone out of the way in the National Executive Committee. And the Constitution does not permit me to handpick people put in those positions. So we had to come up with a convention to choose people so that we have a healthy party, to choose people to run the party well. Now, if the Amazonians start saying postpone, on what grounds are they telling me to postpone?
The so-called Amazonian secessionist movement, they believe that you did not show solidarity. And they claim that you brought the army of President Paul Biya to protect your convention in southern Cameroon. And they don't take it lightly. They say you are not showing solidarity with them.
No, they're being very, very dishonest. Because the first political leader to go out show solidarity with them when the soldiers were being beaten on the streets of Bamenda was me. When the students were being brutalized in the universities was me. I went to find out from the governor why they had to send their troops to get the university students in Buya and Bamenda beaten, why they have to beat the lawyers, seize their gowns up till today. I support the trade unions of the teachers and lawyers. I support them for fighting for their rights, and I've stood behind them till today. But because I did that, I opened the floodgate for them to now start dictating to me, fully get out of parliament. Can they, instead of dictating to people what to do, they sort of terrorize the people, sent for these people's properties to be burned, for schools to be burned, churches to be burned, structures to be destroyed. Most of these structures are structures that were built by the people, the taxpayers' money. You cannot destroy all this, and you want the very person to support you 100%. It is unfortunate.
Ni John Frondi is founder and chairman of Cameroon's main opposition Social Democratic Front Party. You are speaking with me from Bamenda. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today's Friday, February 23rd. Daybreak Africa time is 16 minutes past the hour. Pope Francis has declared today, Friday, a day of fasting and prayer for the Democratic Republic of Congo and South Sudan. The two countries have been engulfed in protracted conflicts for years. Archbishop Josiah Idawu Fiaron is the Secretary General of the Anglican Consultative Council. He says the Anglican community will join Catholics to pray for the people of the Democratic Republic of Congo and South Sudan. He also appeals to the leaders of the two countries to end the violence and restore peace.
Why these two countries? Number one, you see that the extent of the loss of lives, the extent of the suffering in these two countries, honestly, is an embarrassment to Africans in particular and the powers that be in the world in general. For example, look at South Sudan. Majority profess one religion, and DRC is the same. So it's not a question of inter-religious. It has to do with an endemic problem on the continent of Africa: tribalism, corruption, power. And I think this is one of the reasons why my own Archbishop of Canterbury and other religious leaders, denominations, are supporting this call to have an ecumenical approach.
Archbishop, bring us up to speed on what will happen in the Anglican Communion.
When we participate in ecumenical calls like this particular one, what we expect our bishops to do in the various provinces is to get their clergy, inform them with updates on the situation in South Sudan, where millions of people have been displaced, DRC the same. So the priests will now inform their members. They will not only pray, those of them who can actually support these people who've been displaced, who are now in other countries, I expect them to even say, well, in support, this is a practical support for our sisters and brothers who are unfortunately caught in this power play, I would say.
If you're given an opportunity to speak to the leaders of these two countries, DRC and South Sudan, what would your message be to them?
Well, as a Christian leader, I would honestly appeal to them to sink their political differences, come together and agree, particularly South Sudan, which is the youngest country in the world. Everybody had high hopes for this country. I will appeal to them, just as my Archbishop has been doing, the Pope himself has been doing, and some of the other church leaders. Please come together. Agree on how to share power. Get this country moving. But for the DRC, I will appeal to the sitting president. When a leader knows that his popularity is sinking, the popularity is disappearing, for the sake of the people, his own people, our own people, I will expect that leader to either change his stand or to say, well, if this is the case, let's have an election, let somebody else take over. But unfortunately,
We have not come to that level yet on the continent of Africa, and it's sad.
Archbishop Josiah Idawu Fearon is the Secretary General of the Anglican Consultative Council. He was speaking to viewers John Tanza from Cairo, Egypt. Zambian President Edgar Lungu on Thursday concluded a two-day official state visit to Rwanda at the invitation of President Paul Kagame. While there, the two leaders discussed, among other topics, the strengthening of bilateral relations between Kigali and Lusaka. But President Lungu has come under criticism for his alleged numerous foreign trips. Civil society and opposition groups say his foreign trips are a waste of taxpayers' money. But Sunday Chanda, media director for the ruling Patriotic Front Party, tells viewers Peter Clotty that it is regrettable that the opposition will criticize the president for doing his job.
The president is within his mandate to consolidate and to deepen our relations with Rwanda as a country. And so sometimes it must worry the Zambian people that we have the kind of opposition that has serious challenges in putting matters in their proper context. Now, here's a scenario that is obtaining in Zambia. Whenever the president of the Republic of Zambia travels out of the country, the opposition cry out and they question why should he be traveling. So we don't know what it is that they want, but what we know is that they are not going to stop the president from performing his duties, his functions as Zambia's diplomat, number one.
Recently, President Lungu promised at a rally in the north of the country that he will now operate locally. Whatever happened to that promise?
Now, again, it's a question of context, Peter, that even that statement was very clear that the president qualified it, but somehow the meaning and the context has been lost in the conversation. And the president says, where necessary, I'm going to spend as much time in the country and moving from district to district. What the president never said was, I'll never undertake any foreign trip, because there's no president that is going to undertake such a commitment unless he doesn't understand the duties and demands that come with his office.
Sunday, the opposition and civil society groups are saying that taxpayers' money are being used unnecessarily for foreign travels that will not be beneficial to Zambians, particularly when the economy is not performing. Policies the government has implemented appears not to be working because the economy is not producing enough jobs for Zambia's youth. So traveling is a waste of taxpayers' money. Your response to that?
I think that opposition is advancing a very ignorant point of view. Opposition. The opposition knows very well that Moody's credit rating for Zambia says that our economy is stable. Inflation is a single digit, and the government has embarked on serious fiscal discipline. This is not in contest. And unless the opposition wants to believe that Zambia is a country that exists as an island, we know for a fact that Zambia is not an island. When the president undertakes a trip that, like he has done, into Rwanda, we know for a fact that there will be bilateral agreements that will arise as a result of that trip, again coming to enrich and to consolidate the economy. The fundamentals of our economy are still very, very strong. And so anyone who looks at presidential trip as a wastage of public resources, as a wastage of taxpayers' money, is being economical, it's true, or they are advancing a highly ignorant position. Now, the challenge with the opposition in Zambia, including the UPND, led by Mr. Hichilema, who claims to be an accomplished economist, is that he fails to understand basic arguments that Zambia is not an island, and Zambia must, as much as possible, attract foreign direct investment.
Sunday Chanda is media director for Zambia's ruling Patriotic Front Party. He was speaking to viewers Peter Clotty from the capital Lusaka. The UN Refugee Agency has evacuated more than 1,000 highly vulnerable people from Libya in a three-month operation that began last November. The agency hopes to evacuate hundreds more and is searching for more lasting solutions for people who are held in detention centers in Libya. Sabina Castro-Franco has more from Rome.
UNHCR officials say they have been working to evacuate mainly women and children, including single mothers and unaccompanied minors, people who have been held in detention centers in Libya. UNHCR spokesperson in Italy, Carlotta Sami, says arriving in the country means new hope and a chance at a life without violence or abuse. They are mainly nationals from Eritrea, South Sudan and Somalia. An agreement has been reached with the Libyan authorities to release hundreds of these refugees who are in situations of extreme hardship. Among those arriving in Italy on an evacuation flight this month is Emmanuel, an Eritrean who fled to Libya. He is a self-taught artist and is deaf. Because of everything he has been through, his cousin explains, he is accepting. Why are we victims like that? He asks. The two cousins are among the more than 300 refugees who arrived on two recent flights from Tripoli to Rome. Hundreds of others have been airlifted to Niamey in Niger, where they were taken to safe houses. Sabina Castelfranco for VOA News, Rome.
Time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Friday morning to you, Samson.
Good Friday morning to you, James. We begin the sports with a wrap of this week's biggest sports headlines. Deji Ogeimbo and Ferdinand Ubum are sports journalists here in Nigeria, and they will look at what happened in the course of the week. Let's begin with the Nigeria's bobsled and skeleton team, who came last, but of course made history by being the first team ever to participate in that event in the Winter Olympics. Deji, what do you make of the bobsled team?
I think it's a history being made for Nigeria. We've never participated in a bobsled event at the Winter Olympics, and a certain Shimo Adingu took it upon herself now to hoist Nigeria's flag there for the first time. Even though they came 20th out of 28th, they were able to still reduce their time that they had during the heats some few days back too, again. So it's just one step at a time, but the most important thing is participation.
The bobsled participation for Nigeria is not just participating to win medals. This could be where our advantage could rest on in the future.
Okay, let's look at some bit of football news now. Disgrace FIFA chief Sepp Blatter is rooting for Morocco to host the 2026 World Cup. Do you think they should listen to him?
Well, it's difficult. On one hand, he's an experienced administrator. We know the whole issue of Russia 2018 as well as Qatar 2022, the revelations about bribes being collected under his own guidance at that period of time. He talked about how Morocco tried to host the 2006 World Cup. They brought in the bid. They rejected it in 2010 to before they gave it to South Africa. In that regard, he's actually got a good sense.
Ferdinand, were you surprised?
He's just giving an opinion. Morocco narrowly missed out to South Africa during the bid for the 2010 World Cup hosting right. And I think, whether we like it or not, Morocco too are a strong force. And when someone like Sepp Blatter comes out to say Morocco should be looked at, people should take it seriously.
Okay, let's look at the CAF Champions League. The preliminary rounds were concluded this week, and there's been some interesting results from South Africa to North Africa to West Africa. Which of those results stood out for you?
Yeah, not much of surprises. Two new minnows when it comes to the competition, Plus United and Eden Sports. They were participating there for the first time, but the Nigerian contingent got the best in the duel between both of them. And as well as Mountain of America Ministry, they made history. In over 15 years, there was no been a CAF Champions League game in Lagos, and they were able to defeat Real Bamako, who are perennial achievers when it comes to this competition in Africa too. So I think in that note, they've done well too. But I think the biggest upset had to come from Nigeria of Benin, who were able to scale through to the rest to the next round after nobody gave them a chance to qualify.
Okay, I've been speaking with Deji Ogeimbo and Ferdinand Obum, both sports journalists here in Nigeria. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good weekend. We look forward to your report again on Monday morning. And that's it for this Friday, February 23rd edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this week with us. Join us again tomorrow on Monday for more Africa news and features right here on the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as post editor Samson O'Malley, along with all of our engineers, I'm James Botte, wishing you a very good weekend.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, Ethiopia is set to undergo a major political change following the unexpected resignation of Prime Minister Haile Mariam Desalegn. The nation is now under a six-month state of emergency, as declared by the defense minister, but the U.S. State Department says it strongly disagrees with a call to declare a state of emergency. A discussion on Ethiopia.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.